I think I was 15 years old when I first drank, you know, alcohol and smoked weed, really, you know, progressively, you know, the drinking and the smoking and other things started to, you know, become a bigger part of my lifestyle. And then, you know, like all addicts, I think, right, it, as it builds and gets a stronger hold on you, there becomes a point where you totally submit to the chemicals. You know, for me, my bottoming out came out when, you know, I got divorced and my kids were really young. They were 4 and 1. I learned, you know, the measure of your pain is the gap between what you think you should be and what you really are, right? My image of what I thought I should be, which is a happy father raising, you know, beautiful kids and having a happy family life, the reality of that being impossible, that gap was enormous. And I filled it with chemicals. It didn't really take me long to get to that point where all day, every day, 24/7, I needed to be under the influence of something.
Welcome to Linda's Corner. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be talking about addiction recovery. I'm delighted to welcome Eric Fong. Eric is one of the top trial lawyers in the country, as well as a professional speaker and an advocate for addiction recovery. You can reach Eric at his website, ericfonglaw.com, and I'll include a link in the show notes. Welcome, Eric. I'm so glad that you could join with me today.
Thank you.
I have really been looking forward to this conversation because I love to talk about overcoming hard things. And, you know, I would have to say when people look at you and the amazing success that you have had as a lawyer with the top award in getting compensation for your victims in trial. And I think people, a lot of times we look at someone like you and we think, Eric has it all. Mm. He is amazing. He is successful. He's got it all. And then when you scratch under the surface a little bit, we find out there's more to the story. And even though you are amazingly successful, you have also overcome hard things. Would you mind kind of sharing your story a little bit?
Oh, of course. You know, well, first of all, you know, when you were mentioning, like, people may look at me or other people and think, wow, they're successful. And I just wish I had that. And, you know, what I've kind of come to learn and believe is that there's something missing inside of us that craves what other people have. And, you know, the answer, of course, to that craving or that whatever you want to call it, you know, that something that's missing is something that we carry with us all the time. We just don't know it. We don't believe it. We haven't accessed it. So, you know, and I was riddled with envy and jealousy and, you know, looking at other lawyers and measuring up, where do I stand with them or anyone? You know, you do it in high school, you do it before that, you do it in college, you do it through your life of, you know, comparing what we have or who we are to others, all the while we're neglecting, you know, what we have right inside of us right now. And I'll say this, some of the most miserable people I know, you would look at them and think what we're talking about now, that they have it all, you know, unlimited money, unlimited recognition, unlimited success. And they're as empty as the person, you know, living on the street, perhaps more so, you know, who at least that person knows who they are and have a sense of purpose and meaning.
And you mentioned the couple of words, emptiness and craving. And I think that is very common when we feel that emptiness inside of us that we carry with us wherever we go, with whatever profession we're in, with whatever we are doing. And there is a desire to fill it. And sometimes we fill that with addictions. And that's something that you struggled with.
Well, no, it, bingo, you know, I mean, that's exactly right. You know, but, and I want to, you know, before I get to that, you know, we live in a world, a society where, you know, there's these images projected to us and we're kind of fed and told what it means to be something. And we aren't taught, you know, to value the things that actually matter in life, which is kindness, generosity, compassion, understanding, love, right? We're taught to value achievement, you know, goal setting, tangible physical belongings, possession, you know, wealth. And so when you are told that you have to be a certain way to be successful or to be accepted or to be pretty, right? Or whatever exterior definition is being told to you that you have to be. And that's a root of the emptiness because it's not attainable. It's not real. And so, you know, for me, my story, it started with, I think, obviously just a natural love affair with alcohol and marijuana. I think I was 15 years old when I first drank, you know, alcohol, and really shortly after that, smoked weed. And within a short time of that, the two together, and I just couldn't imagine a better feeling, you know. And early on in my life, you know, I was able to, I don't know, maybe I was blessed with, you know, my dad was a college professor, and, you know, I kind of won the lottery when it came to parents and structure and discipline and, you know, the things that we were just talking about. Here's what you have to do. And there was no question about it. It was a very strict environment. So I was able to get through, you know, the education pretty simply. It wasn't hard. When I graduated from high school, it wasn't a big thing because I knew I'd go to college. And I never wanted to be a lawyer, but I had to keep going to school if I wanted to make my parents happy. So I just went to law school because I majored in sociology. And then I went to law school and didn't want to be a lawyer. And really, you know, progressively, you know, the drinking and the smoking and other things started to, you know, become a bigger part of my lifestyle. And then, you know, kind of, you know, like all addicts, I think, right? It, as it builds and gets a stronger hold on you, there becomes a point where you totally submit to the chemicals, and you no longer, like, the number of times addicts try to quit or they inflict so much pain and misery on their lives and those around them. It's not fun, right? It's not enjoyable to live that way. And every possible means of quitting don't work. You know, for me, my bottoming out came out when, you know, I got divorced and my kids were really young. They were 4 and 1. And I learned, you know, in getting sober that the measure of your pain is the gap between what you think you should be and what you really are. Right. So if you, what we were talking, if you think you should have all this stuff, or if you think you should be, I don't know, I just wanted to be a dad. I just wanted to be a husband. And here I was, you know, one of the most embarrassing, humiliating, you know, painful, grieving moments of my life, because my family life was impossible and a failure. Right. My image of what I thought I should be, which is a happy father raising, you know, beautiful kids and having a happy family life, the reality of that being impossible, that gap was enormous. And I filled it with chemicals. And it didn't take long. You know, when I say it didn't take long, I mean, from being divorced, you know, to going all in, like I said, you just submit. Yeah. Like, there's, what else are you going to do? It's just, how quickly can I get messed up in the morning? It didn't really take me long to get to that point where all day, every day, 24/7, I needed to be under the influence of something. And, I don't know. I mean, that's not, like I said, it's not fun. And at the same time, as I neglected myself, of course, I was neglecting everyone around me, most importantly, my kids. And I went from having them half the time to every weekend, to every other weekend, to maybe I'd see them in a month. Like, I turned my back on them. And the fallout from that is still, right? I mean, the ripple effects of that, to regain that trust and and love is a long journey. So I've been sober for, June will be 8 years, right? So for 8 years, I'm trying to regain that trust, and I got a long ways to go. So, you know, I don't know, you know, I reached this point where I knew I was going to die, right? Like there was nothing, there was no meaning in what I was doing. There was no satisfaction. I was feeling horrible. Like physically, I was pretty sick, including losing my mind, you know? And I almost had this like out of body experience. I know that sounds crazy, but I was in a bar and I was with my girlfriend and she was passed out, you know, imagine that. And I remember this army slogan. I was looking like I was looking down on my life saying, you know, you have to be all you can be. You have to start living and you're just wasting your life. And I was just absolutely disgusted with the scene that I was in and who I was and what I'd become. You know, I kind of like scooped her up and just dropped her off at her apartment. And as I was driving home, I ran off the freeway and, you know, I didn't get hurt. I didn't hurt anyone. I was able to get home and I woke up the next morning, you know, hungover like always. And I still had this card and I wrote on it, I'm going to stop smoking weed. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to be healthy. I'm going to be there for my kids. And later that day, I was flying to Wyoming and I'm at the airport drinking again, you know, and for lack of a better way of describing it, where I was going, I was surrounded by people that were really worried about me. And they kind of had this like intervention. And I went to an AA meeting there. And when I came back to Seattle and the wheels hit the ground, the first thing I did as the plane is landing is turning my phone off and finding an AA hall, went straight to it from the airport. And I haven't had any chemicals since.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing that you didn't have a slide back. So as I'm listening to your story, it is interesting what a paradox the chemicals and the addiction is. You said from the start, you couldn't imagine a better feeling. And then you described it as misery, both.
Yeah.
And the desire to do something and to be something more, and then the draw to pull it back in. And so I think I would love, let's see, if we're talking to someone who's struggling in an addiction, and they're in that spot where they're 15 and they still think, I can't imagine a better feeling. It might be hard to convince them that this doesn't lead to good things. And so let's talk to anyone who is maybe awake enough to listen, to say, you know what? Actually, it isn't as great as I once thought it was. And at some point, it gets where it's not as great as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So can we talk to somebody who's there who would like to get out? And a lot of times, we have to hit rock bottom before we're willing to make that change. So if somebody needs to get there, they need to get there. But if we can help somebody before they get to that point, how do I get out? And is it worth it? I mean, you did it. And so now they can see your face and say, someone did it. Does that mean that I can do it too? I mean, can you give them some hope that I can get out too?
Yeah, well, what I know is that everybody has this star inside of them that's burning to do great things and to be special and to find your fate and destiny and your own inner genius, right? You know, your perfectness. And that's the purpose that we walk, you know, that's what, you know, we're on loan to each other so that we can share this, you know, with each encounter we have. And, you know, so the person that I was and that, you know, maybe hearing this and the feelings of hopelessness and what's the point of any of this and I don't matter and I'm not important or I can't do this is your mind playing a trick on you, right? That there's a source that is feeding that negative message. And it's a scary place to go to that source and to be honest about it, right? But that's where the journey has to start, is what is it that is causing the void, the emptiness, you know? And when you can tap into that, which is, you know, the scariest places is where we find the most strength. And if you can actually go there and be honest about it and talk about it and not be ashamed of it, or to be comfortable with who you are in your own skin, suddenly you don't need, you know, these other things that fill you with an artificial sense of something other than who you really are. Because what that does is it builds on itself cumulatively, and you become top heavy and you will collapse.
Wow. I love that. As we're talking about addiction, we're talking about trying to take care of overcoming this hard thing. But it's more successful when we look at the source of trying to fill that emptiness inside. And if we can fill that with something healthy, something good, something positive, something that helps us and the yeah. people that we care about, then it changes everything.
Yeah. You know, they do, it may be as simple as, I'm sure you've heard of a gratitude list, right? It physically changes the brain.
It does.
Every day you say to yourself when you wake up three things that are positive. I am grateful that I'm going to have three meals today. I just walked through the streets of Seattle and just saw a young person whacked out of fentanyl. And someone right now is dying in Seattle from a drug overdose, right? And so no matter how bad we have it, it's pretty easy to find something to be grateful for where we are. And so three things. I'm grateful that I'll have three meals today. Some people, by the way, can't come up with three things. And that's a scary place to be.
And even those people have three things, but they can't see them.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's right. You know, it's just that the world is so heavy and burdensome and crushing that in that moment, I just can't come up with three things that I can be grateful for. And that's that would be a really scary place to be. But, you know, even if you come up with one every day and then the next day, you know, maybe I'm grateful because it's actually, there's a sun and I see birds and I hear them. And I didn't know that birds made that beautiful sound and I just heard it. And then the day after that, you know, it's springtime and it's sunny and there's this breeze that's filling my lungs and the wind is, you know, it's kissing my cheek. And this is the moment that I spend my life to live. I'm going to be grateful for just right now. And then the day after that, you get to something deeper and more profound, which is, you know what? My parents are, you know, I got huge issues with them and they did some pretty horrible things to me, but I think they love me, right? And you will change every day. If you practice this stuff, your brain will change. They can see it on an MRI.
That is so beautiful. You just gave an action step, something that I can do to help yeah. improve my brain, to help improve my situation, to help fill the void, to help give me the power to be able to take care of the other things. Because if the void is filled, then I don't require the addiction to fill it.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
You know, and that's a small habit that cumulatively makes a difference over your life. And like all good disciplines, you know, it's so simple. And yet we make poor choices in the face of the overwhelming evidence that it's not a good idea. You know, fries instead of a salad, you know, an extra heaping of you know, seconds versus, you know, I'll be all right if I skip that little bit. Or, you know, for me, you know, drinking or, you know, all that stuff. If you flip those and make another choice that you create a habit, in the short term, it may not be as instantly gratifying in the long run, those little things turn out to be life-changing, life-saving difference makers. And so it's the discipline that, you know, you can see the future, right? We know what will happen if we do, I don't know, you know, right. Cause and effect is pretty worn out at this point.
It happens.
You know, so it's having, you know, so you were talking about young folks and wisdom and experience is something that you have to earn. And some people never get there. Other people, I mean, I was talking to an 18-year-old that blew me away and, you know, brought tears to my eyes with how deep and profound she was with her understanding of people and this unspoken communication. And, you know, so anyways,
That is amazing. Well done. So there is hope and you are worth it. And as we focus on positive things that can help fill the void. And those things matter. It matters. It matters that I matter. Yeah. And I think that's, we need to know that we're worth it. Because sometimes you mention, like right now in our gratitude list, thinking of someone in a destitute spot, there are people who are in destitute spots who feel like, I am not worth it. I'm not worth it.
Yeah. And I see it every day and there's help, there's solutions, but you have to be open to receiving it. You have to be honest with yourself that you need it, right? Instead of the tough exterior of, you know, I'm okay. And, you know, the part of that openness and the willingness to receiving the help is the vulnerability it takes to say, I'm not well. I don't feel good about myself. If I tell someone this, they're going to reject me. You know, if you really knew how I really feel, you wouldn't care about me, right? These are the lies that we tell ourselves that make it really hard for us to step out of our cocoons or, you know, out of this self-imposed torture chamber to open up and really free your inner soul.
And that takes courage.
It takes a tremendous amount of courage.
It takes a lot of courage.
And some people are punished for that. You know, like a lot of people have shared with someone and been betrayed with that trust. Mm-hmm. And that says, you know, the rest of their life, I can't open up to people because if I do, I'll just get hurt. And the closer the person is, the more hurt I'll get. Right. So.
And that's such a valid point because we have to have courage. We have to be vulnerable. We have to be open. We have to share. And yet it is absolutely true that not every person on this planet is worthy of that trust.
You will get hurt. Mm-hmm. To know that you can share, it's going to happen, right? And it's taking the risk. And I think, you know, imagination is a big thing. I'm really big on imagination right now. Ooh, which is...
Expound on that.
Well, you know, we imagination to do things that we're not supposed to do or that, you know, like we were talking about earlier, these constructs that we have to live within. That tell us what we're supposed to do and how we're supposed to do it. If we just keep doing it the way we're told to do it, the way it's always been done before, we'll just always just be normal at best. But if you have the imagination to see things differently, which by the way, gets you in trouble, right? But if you have the imagination to look at the world differently and to see solutions to problems that aren't traditional, but it's the way you think that you could handle it, that's what we need in this world more than anything is the imagination to do stuff differently than it's been done before. Because what we're doing right now ain't working. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of insecurities. And we need a shakeup. We need a jolt. We need something refreshing and different. And that requires imagination and courage. Because, and it's strength, because you will get rejected for being different, for quite frankly, being who you are and just having the spontaneity and creativity to express it. That'll get you in trouble because the status quo doesn't like things that are different.
That is so true. And as we try to be brave and we try to use our imagination, we try to be creative and to do and to feel like I can be myself, there will be some people who will reject me, but there will also be people who will accept me. And what that tells me is the people who accept me with who I really am, those are the people that I want to associate with because I don't have to pretend. I can be, and then I can be happy.
Yeah. And what you learn is that when people react a certain way to you that is like a head scratcher, it's saying more about them than you. Like that's their deal. And we can't let their stuff affect us in these deep ways. I mean, just they're not worth it. Like they got something to figure out, not you.
And that's really important to recognize and to remember. And I thought about your comment that you had this wonderful interaction with an 18-year-old who got it. And you know, it doesn't, we can get it at any age. And if we haven't figured it out yet, it's not too late. We can still get it. But when you get it, you're happier.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it, you know, and it's finding that peace and that ease, you know, that, you know, the confidence, a faith, the belief, you know, spiritual principles of hope, you know, just and resilience. Like we all have it. We all have this incredible reservoir of strength. Everybody listening right now knows that's the truth. Like it's the strength that it requires just to get through every day is extraordinary. And some people have to expand less of the reservoirs to get through each day, right? Other people, their suffering requires a lot more strength, but it's that courage, right? If it's not going to kill you, it makes you stronger. And to come out of those moments, which, you know, which comes back into addictions, I believe there's a similarity to surviving cancer. Like you shouldn't live. You come through a near-death experience or you are an addict that you get to the point, if you don't get clean and sober, you're going to die. And you actually figure that out. You have gained a perspective into life that is far deeper and meaningful than what you had prior to those inciting events.
And isn't it wonderful that you can pull out of that something amazing?
Yeah.
You can go through something hard and you have a depth of character and of understanding that runs deep because of your experiences. So again, if someone is in this spot who's listening or who is watching, please know that you're worth it, that you can do this, and we invite you to come. Don't wait till you hit bottom. Come and heal.
And you're not alone. And you're not alone.
And that matters because whenever we are in a dark place, we feel extremely alone. So I appreciate very much you being willing to share some of your story to help people feel like they're not alone. Because there are people like yourself who was able to mask it pretty well and to become successful in spite of. And there are people in all walks of life who struggle with addiction of this kind or that kind or the other kind. And it's real. It's real and it's hard. Do you have anything that you want to make sure that we cover before we close today? Any message you have to someone who is in a spot where you were, say, 8, 9 years ago?
You know, I'm not sure I have anything profound or life-changing other than to say, you know, that star is in there. It may be cloaked in tar and just, you know, being, you know, slowly smothering, but it's smoldering. And to feed it so that it grows, you know, I'll go back to that word imagination. You know, if you're willing to do something different and to step out of a place that is into a world that's more uncomfortable, and you push yourself to do things that are different, that challenge you, that's where your growth will be. You know, get out of the rut and the habit that is caused you to, you know, isolate, which is what I did. I totally reclused and isolated and just, you know, hid. You know, if you can slowly get healthy again and do things that you know you need to do to start feeling better again, you know, feed that. And it takes years. It's not, that's what I would say is don't get discouraged if 90 days go by and your life hasn't just turned around. But I'm a big believer of the 12 steps, and they talk about the promises, and those, any one of those steps individually are common sense. And it's not a religion. It's not the thing that held me away from the 12 steps was this idea that it's a religion or, you know, something connected to some organized faith. And it's not. Any one of those steps is really basic common sense, deep universal truth. No one would look at them and say, oh, that's crazy. No, they're actually brilliant. And what's incredible about them is how they're strung together in a series of steps that build upon themselves while you're being held comfortably by someone who's been there before. And they kind of shepherd you through this dangerous road of recovery. And the promises of getting a new life will happen. It just works, but you have to go all in on it. And if you go to a group and it's weird and you don't get a good vibe from it, go to a different group. It'll have a totally different feel. Same thing with counseling, right? If you go to a counselor, which by the way, I'm a huge advocate of, and it doesn't seem right, go meet up with someone that does feel right. You know, both for your personal internal kind of suffering and for maybe troubles with relationships with others. You know, seek the help. It's there and it's free. You know, all of this stuff is free. So go get it.
Go get it. And don't try to do it alone. We need help. We need other people.
Yeah.
And the resources are available.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you, Eric. I appreciate so much you visiting with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. In closing, I'd like to share a quote by Mahatma Gandhi. He said, "As human beings, our greatness lies not so much in being able to remake the world as in being able to remake ourselves." If you're struggling with an addiction, I invite you to remake yourself because you're worth it. See you next time on Linda's Corner. Thanks for listening. Please share and subscribe to help us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to heal your life from the inside out, there is a free video series at hopeforhealingfoundation.org. Just click on the free stuff tab. I also invite you to grab a copy of one of my books, like Crushed, A Journey Through Depression, and You Got This, an action plan to calm fear, anxiety, worry, and stress. See you next time on Linda's Corner.